Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, today with Joy B. Thank you for joining us and listening in.
We have a full show today, as usual, so let's get right to it. Here's our civic reporter, Dennis Hart, with a summary of this week's local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
It was another busy week for news in and around Ames. In Tuesday's Tribune, a report on Monday night's Ames School Board meeting, where the board talked about the future of transportation within the district. Durham School Service's three-year contract is set to expire at the end of the school year, so the district will have to decide how to handle busing services as it moves forward. Chief Financial Officer Chris Stensland said the district could issue a request for proposal to find a new service provider or extend the current contract with Durham by 1 year. A third possible option was also proposed, bringing transportation in-house within the district. And the idea of bringing in a consultant to do an independent analysis was also proposed. Board member Rodney Briggs said he thinks the best course of action would be conduct the independent analysis and at the same time offer Durham a 1 year extension. He said that would give the board the chance to get the study done so it can make the right decision. Board member Lewis Rosser said it might be in the district's best interest to both issue an RFP and bring in a consultant. He said it might end up that Durham gets a 3 year contract, but in his words, I'd rather not give them another year. We struggled with them last year and 3 or 4 years before that. At the end of the evening, no decisions were made. Board members also expressed their preliminary support for paying $75,000 a year in annual operating costs for a new high school pool. Superintendent Tim Taylor said the district needed to be ready to pay up to $75,000 in comparison to past years, when the costs range up to $60,000. And the board decided to offer a contract for the new Ames High School project to Story Construction of Ames. Also in Tuesday's Tribune, Ames police were investigating a robbery that took place early Monday morning at the Swift Shop convenience store on South Duff. The suspect brandished a handgun and demanded that the clerk give him cash from the register. The clerk gave the suspect cash, and the man fled from the store and headed south. The amount of money taken was still being determined. Anyone with information was urged to call the Ames Police Department. Also in Tuesday's newspaper, the Western Iowa woman who police said struck a pedestrian with her vehicle near the Iowa State campus last March pleaded guilty to a lesser charge. 22-year-old Megan Laurie Crawford of Sloan was arrested in July after she turned herself in at the Story County Jail. She was originally charged with leaving the scene of an accident, which took place at the intersection of Chamberlain and Hayward in Ames. Police said the victim was crossing Hayward when Crawford, in a gray Chevrolet, turned right, struck the victim, and kept driving without stopping. The victim suffered a concussion and was taken to Mary Greeley Medical Center. Crawford pleaded guilty to leaving the scene of an accident after medical records indicated the victim was not seriously injured. Her sentencing hearing is scheduled for January 11th. Also in Tuesday's Trib, word that Iowa State's Graduate College has received a $1 million grant from the U.S. Department of Education. The grant will further the program's mission of helping low-income, first-generation, and underrepresented student populations earn doctorate degrees. There was also word that Iowa State's Department of Agronomy will close its soil and plant analysis lab at the end of the year because of declining samples to test. The number of samples sent to the lab has declined over the decades to the point where it's processing a small number compared to private labs in the state. 17 other labs are certified by the State Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship to test samples. Also in Tuesday's Trib, about 70 children and about 25 firefighters from the Ames, Story City, and Colo fire departments took part in the annual Shop with a Firefighter event at both Ames Walmart stores on Monday night. Families came from as far away as Iowa Falls and Fort Dodge to take part in the event. Shop with a Firefighter helps foster families from around the area fulfill the needs on their holiday wish list with a little help from area firefighters. Tuesday's Tribune also reported on the death of a former Ames City Councilwoman. Judith Hoffman was 78. She served on the City Council for 16 years, starting in 1988. She helped pass non-smoking and non-discrimination measures, and she lobbied at the state capitol in Des Moines to prevent the reinstatement of the death penalty in Iowa. Hoffman was a longtime lobbyist for the League of Women Voters in Iowa and served on the Ames Planning and Zoning Commission and Transit Board. She also worked with Youth and Shelter Services and with Healthiest Ames. While she was on the city council in the early 2000s, she helped pass an ordinance that banned smoking in Ames restaurants during certain times of the day. The state Supreme Court struck that measure down in 2003, after which Hoffman visited Ames restaurants and asked them to continue to operate as non-smoking establishments. A memorial service for Hoffman will be held at 2 o'clock tomorrow, Saturday afternoon, in the Collegiate Presbyterian Church. One more note from Tuesday's Tribune, Iowa State's football team will play its first bowl game in 5 years at the Liberty Bowl in Memphis. The Cyclones will take on the Memphis Tigers, who lost only 2 games this season. The game will take place on December 30th at 11:30 a.m. Iowa State won 7 of its 12 games during the regular season, including a victory over Oklahoma, which won the Big 12 title game last weekend. In Wednesday's Ames Tribune, a report on Tuesday's Story County Board of Supervisors meeting, in which much of the discussion was about whether Supervisor Loris Olson overstepped her bounds as a supervisor and put the county at legal risk. Board Chairman Rick Sanders said he had reviewed Olson's remarks last month to the Ames City Council about a potential housing study and said he found himself in disbelief at Olson's apparent negotiation with the council on behalf of the supervisors. Story County Attorney Jessica Reynolds outlined the parts of Olson's remarks where, in Reynolds' understanding, she had made offers and counteroffers on behalf of the county. Reynolds told Olson, "Supervisor, you are one member of a three-member board. You are not empowered to act alone." Sanders said Olson apologized to him last week, and Olson said Tuesday that she never intended in any way to negotiate with the city council about participation in the housing study. She also said she did not want to put the county in legal jeopardy. Tuesday's meeting was similar to a string of meetings last July in which Olson was criticized in part for creating a hostile work environment. Reynolds had written a memo to the board back then about how the actions of individual board members could result in potential liability for the county or the board. Olson had attended the city council meeting in November to answer questions about the supervisor's earlier request for the city to join the county in a study to identify housing needs in the county. Staff recommended that the city not take part in the study because it's already involved in two others. Olson said her goal was to get the city involved in some kind of collaboration, but that she did a poor job of conveying information to the council. She said she was not there to negotiate, that, in her words, "I have no power to negotiate on behalf of the board." Olson said that in the future she would be sure to watch her words and her phrasing when speaking in a public forum. At the end of Tuesday's meeting, Olson and Sanders got into a disagreement when Sanders said that Olson had resumed meeting with county staff individually, going against County Attorney Reynolds' earlier recommendation that there be a witness present for such meetings to protect Olson and the county. Olson said she was limited in her capacity as a supervisor if she could not meet with staff alone. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, longtime Sioux City resident Dr. Cindy Hansen announced her candidacy for Iowa's 4th Congressional District in Ames on Tuesday. Hansen is the first Republican to announce she would oppose GOP Congressman Steve King in next year's primary election. On the Democratic side, several people have announced they're seeking their party's nomination to challenge King or Hansen if she should win the primary. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, the State Department of Transportation held an informational meeting Tuesday to gauge public opinion about the potential construction of an interchange on U.S. Highway 30. The project would be designed to improve safety on 580th Avenue and U.S. 30 between Ames and Nevada. The proposal entails building frontage roads along with a three-quadrant interchange, meaning the interchange will occupy three of the intersection's four quadrants to replace current access points to U.S. 30 that have been deemed to be unsafe because of increasing traffic levels. A 580th Avenue bridge would go over U.S. 30. Construction would cost around $14 million. In a separate project, the Department of Transportation also plans to rework 6th Street's intersection with U.S. 30 in Nevada into an interchange. That would keep drivers from having to wait for an opening in oncoming traffic on U.S. 30 to turn onto 6th Street. Instead, a bridge would go over the highway. Public reception to the plans at Tuesday's meeting was mixed. Some said the construction would enhance safety levels, overall efficiency, and local businesses. But other people said they're concerned about truck traffic and where it will enter the highway. Also Wednesday, the Tribune reported that Iowa State Vice President and Chief Information Officer Jim Kurtenbach announced his resignation. He will return to the College of Business, where he earned tenured faculty status 20 years ago. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, Wilson Toyota in Ames was transformed into a scene straight from the North Pole Tuesday evening in honor of the business's annual Christmas party to benefit Lutheran Services. Every year for at least the past 7 years, the dealership has opened its doors after hours to welcome young residents of the Ames Treatment Center, which helps kids ages 5 to 15 who have severe emotional and behavioral disorders. They get to experience a night of Christmas festivities and presents. About 40 children spent the evening enjoying a meal from Hickory Park, watching skits performed by dealership employees dressed in full holiday costumes, and opening presents purchased and donated by employees. Employees played the role of Santa's elves and kept the night lively with music, dancing, and jokes. The community-driven Christmas party is held in place of an annual company holiday party. One by one, children got to go to the front of the room and unwrap one gift. Gifts included skateboards, stuffed animals, clothing, and toys. A fun time indeed. In Thursday's Ames Tribune, word that Story County supervisors have discussed whether to get involved with a housing grant pilot program. Supervisor Loris Olson is advocating for the program, which would be in place for the 2019 fiscal year. She said there's a need for affordable housing in the county's smaller communities and unincorporated areas. Groups eligible for the grants would include small municipalities, housing authorities, nonprofits, and charitable organizations. Board Chairman Rick Sanders and Supervisor Marty Chitty were concerned about the $150,000 the pilot program could cost. The supervisors voted to refer the proposed program to the county's legal department. Also in Thursday's TRIB, the Ames Planning and Zoning Commission voted against recommending approval of a major development plan and against rezoning the property on the westernmost part of the city. Their proposal for a project west of 5508 Lincoln Way is to build an apartment complex with more than 860 bedrooms. It would cater in part to Iowa State students. Even though the commission voted against the plan, it will still appear before the city council next month. Also in Thursday's Tribune, a former Boone youth pastor who pleaded guilty to having inappropriate contact with a 20-year-old woman since she was 16 years old was sentenced to 4 years in prison. 47-year-old Joel Mark Waltz pleaded guilty to two counts of sexual exploitation of a minor. He resigned from his position at Grace Community Church last year, shortly after the allegations were brought against him. Also in Thursday's paper, that Iowa State University lecturer who was arrested last week in class on a charge of public intoxication has been placed on administrative leave. 56-year-old Gordon Knight was arrested after police received an anonymous call that he was slurring his words and stumbling. Knight, a lecturer in philosophy and religious studies, will not be allowed on campus while the university conducts its investigation. Also in Thursday's Tribune, the deadline to complete an application to volunteer for the Ames Transit Agency Board has been extended to December 14th. The volunteer would fill the remainder of Mayor-elect John Hala's unexpired Transit Board term through May of 2019. And the Ames Public Art Commission is encouraging Ames neighborhoods to apply to have one of the current annual outdoor sculpture exhibition works of art installed in their neighborhood. The artwork must be installed in a public area that is open and can be accessed by Ames citizens, such as in a neighborhood park, entrance area, or cul-de-sac. There is no cost to the neighborhood. And one more note from Thursday's Trib, a story about Ray Reynolds, who heads up Nevada's Fire and Emergency Medical Services. He's developed a statewide smoke alarm installation program that has resulted in more than 50,000 smoke alarms being installed in homes around Iowa. In this week's Nevada Journal, Story County Auditor Lucy Martin advised all active voters who lack an Iowa driver's license or an Iowa non-operator ID to check their mail. The Iowa Secretary of State planned to mail new voter ID cards to an estimated 4,000 Story County actively registered voters who do not have a State Department of Transportation number. Voters are expected to sign those cards and present them when voting. The cards also include a personal identification number that voters without an Iowa DOT identification can use when requesting an absentee ballot. New voter identification requirements in Iowa begin next month. Also in this week's journal, a warning from the State Attorney General's office about shopping online this holiday season. The AG said such shopping gives scammers the chance to steal your personal information. The first tip from the Attorney General, make sure any website you visit is legitimate. If it has a long string of random letters and numbers in its web address, it might be fake. Search the website address through a search engine. Look for HTTPS at the beginning of a web address. The S stands for secure. Also, use your credit card to pay online. That gives you more protections than debit cards, prepaid money cards, or gift cards do. And when you come across an unusually good offer online from a seller you don't recognize, be sure to check with other retailers for comparable prices on comparable merchandise. In other words, if it seems too good to be true, it might be too good to be true. In this week's Boone News Republican, a report on the Boone City Council meeting this past Monday, Builders Club is a student-led organization that teaches leadership skills through service to others. Also in the Herald, word that former Roland Mayor Roger Fritz and his son Gerald are in the process of reclaiming citizenship from the country of Luxembourg. That country took the citizenship of people who left back in the 1800s. Now Luxembourg says direct descendants of those people can reclaim their citizenship. So Fritz and his son are honoring their ancestral heritage, and they are part of a growing number of people seeking dual citizenship in a European country. And that is your weekly summary of news in and around Ames, from the pages of the Tribune and other nearby newspapers.
And this is Local Talk. Thank you, Dennis Hart, KHOI Civic Reporter. And that's a summary of this week's local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. You can find more at amestrib.com. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for today, together with Joy B. And as you probably know, this week, Time Magazine announced its much-anticipated Person of the Year 2017. Since 1927, Time Magazine has given this Person of the Year title to an individual or a group of people whom the magazine editors see as most influencing news and events in the past year, quote, for good or ill, unquote. This year's cover of Time magazine, dated December 18th, names the, quote, silence breakers as person of the year. In other words, thousands of people across the world who have come forward with their experiences of sexual harassment and assault.
Time magazine's editor-in-chief, Edward Felsenthal, said the idea that influential, inspirational individuals shape the world could not be more apt this year. For giving voice to open secrets, for moving whispers networks into social networks, to pushing us all to stop accepting the unacceptable. Time.com features a lengthy essay on this topic. In it, they say, norms evolve, and it's long past time for any culture to view harassment as acceptable.
In the wake of the buzz created by the Time announcement, Joy and I decided to take the local temperature on the topic by going to the student union at Iowa State University. We went to the Commons and walked around and casually asked students to share their thoughts on the topic. Not everybody was willing to speak with us, but a lot of them were. So we asked them how they felt about the Person of the Year announcement and how sexual assault touched their lives. We also ended up getting some statements from folks around the KHY who had something to say as well. So here are some of the people who shared their thoughts and experiences.
Well, maybe some people would be surprised by it, but I don't think I was. Mm-hmm. All women have, even no matter how old they are. But I feel like now it's coming to light.
Are you concerned about going into professional field and encountering this?
Yeah, I mean, I do have some concerns about that, especially like realizing how big of a problem it is. Then maybe when I get older, when I am in my career, it's going to be difficult for me just because I'm a woman and I would have to face these problems. But yeah, I definitely have concerns about it.
You're being blonde and blue-eyed.
Yes, yes. Well, I feel like abuse has been, like, not talked about very much, so I feel like it's important that it's shared, especially on social media, because it reaches a lot of people. So I feel like doing this will show, like, how big of a problem it actually is. I guess I just feel like we're going to move in a positive direction after this, and it'll help a lot.
Well, it's about time. The part of the Time magazine image that struck me with the cover was the woman that wasn't actually shown on the cover. You see five people there, but then there's one person. You just see an elbow. And so to me, it's a combination of, yes, we're making all this great progress, but there's still more work to be done. We still have a lot of women out there that are afraid to come out with these experiences, and we still have people that will ignore those experiences. I do know people close to me that were sexually assaulted by violent means. It was just kind of told to me, like, oh, hey, this happened. And so my thoughts are it's about time. And I'm very excited for the next couple of years to see how this plays out.
I definitely know people who have dealt with this, whether it be family or friends. I've known a few that have actually been able to post and, on their social media accounts to share their stories. It takes away a lot of the stigma and definitely transfers the stigma to the people who have committed the crimes. It kind of shows you that the world is not always as pleasant as it seems. It's difficult because you want to react, you want to do something for them, but sometimes the only thing that you can do is listen, and that's what we're here for. You know, with the Me Too movement, everyone's talking, and we all need to be there to listen to their stories.
It's important that men listen to the Me Too movement?
Absolutely. Everyone needs to listen to the movement. Everyone needs to be a part of the solution.
Do you know any men who have talked about committing these acts of aggression?
I've gotten vibes from people before who seem like they're that kind of person. When certain bro-y guys, you get the vibe from them.
Do you feel that there's pressure not to talk about this?
I think that's what Me Too is all about, is relieving that pressure. And the more we talk about it, the more we can put the stigma behind us and move on to a solution.
I think it was really awesome that they're trying to bring this up and show that it is a big issue, especially on college campuses. I've always heard like 1 in 5 women will have to deal with this. I don't know. In my sorority here, like I've heard people in the Greek life have had experiences like this, and I know it's a big thing on like every campus. All girls got to be safe and like walk together, stuff like that. So yeah, I'm glad that it's being told more now lately and a lot of people are speaking up, because I think it's really important to hear about.
I think everybody that's coming out is because of the Me Too movement. Just wish they would have done it sooner, though. I just found out in my family that one of my cousins, her uncle, had been telling her to have sexual intercourse with her for the past 15 years. On Monday, she came running to my grandmother's house that her uncle had been telling her to have sexual intercourse with her over the past 15 years. And it's not just only her. My aunt has been telling her that people from that family have been forcing her to do stuff too.
I think the conversation needs to shift to what is normal, what is acceptable, what's healthy. And by shifting the conversation, you set the tone for civility. And you shift the focus on, you know, that is not acceptable. And if you see something wrong, say it. And be fearless.
People don't want to bring it up. It's almost that it's just it's a difficult topic to bring up. And then, of course, you know, you think about the people who are perpetuating this violence. Of course, they're not going to bring it up. It's all about their reputation. And they're not going to drag themselves through the mud on purpose, I guess. I feel that white men, especially those who are in positions of power, have been abusing their privilege for far too long, and that a publication such as Time is a pretty powerful statement. I personally know a lot of people who are survivors of both sexual assault and of rape, and the feeling of powerlessness of how it impacts someone's self-worth, of how it impacts their ability to feel safe. I mean, I have friends too who will not, you know, walk downtown at night, who don't want to even walk in the grocery store parking lot at night for fear of what could happen.
Speaking out's always a good thing. This camp that I work at, it's south of Des Moines, and we have some of those kids have had sexual incidents happen to them, in whether it's a foster home, their home, or just a different situation.
So you're not surprised by these revelations?
No. My sister's actually a product of molestation. My mom got pregnant as a result. My mom's the youngest of 9, so it wasn't always readily noticeable that something was going on. So she made it a point to always ask me and my sister, if anything changed in our demeanor, no matter what it was, she'd ask us. So I guess that was a lucky thing for me.
Regarding the Me Too movement, I think that it is good in a way because people are speaking out about it. However, I think it creates an unreal expectation because it's primarily celebrities that are speaking out about it, and they are making this claim that because we're strong enough to do it, other women can too. But I don't think that's realistic because a lot of women who have gone through these experiences are not in the position where they can make a public statement and get as much support as these celebrities are. I think that there needs to be more work done to help the everyday woman feel more comfortable talking out about these issues.
Is this something that you know from your own circle of family and friends?
Yes.
Where are you from?
From Italy.
Italy. Are you aware of a problem in Italy with sexual assault?
Yeah.
I guess with knowing people in my own life who've experienced this, I'm not surprised, unfortunately. Of course, we as women, we need to be respected. And so anytime that doesn't happen, that should come to the light. And so the issues can be resolved. We can take action and be able to just recognize that this is a problem and we can't be complacent about it. So,
I just think it's disgusting, really, to be honest. I think it's really brave of all the women that are coming out, because it's not easy when people are in such high positions of power. And then when they abuse that power, they think they can get away with it and catches up to them eventually. So that's what I think about it, to be honest.
This has been something that's been occurring for a long time, and many women haven't been able to speak up and tell their stories. And by speaking up, they encourage other women that are suffering through this to speak up as well and report the person that's been doing harm to them. Mm-hmm. And it's something that everybody knows it's been happening for years, but now it's it's on the spotlight, so people have to do something about it. And that this has empowered women everywhere to speak their minds, so this has become a big movement now.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We are currently raising funds for KHOI's operations during this fall membership drive, so please go to KHOI to make your member donation. Again, that's KHOIFM.org, KHOIFM.org, and click on the donate button. We just heard voices of students and other young adults responding to Time Magazine's Person of the Year 2017 award, The Silence Breakers, on the topic of sexual assault. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, together with Joy B. We recorded these voices yesterday at the ISU Student Union in the Commons, and we appreciated everybody who shared their thoughts with us.
We were also fortunate yesterday to speak with Kirsten Anderson from Des Moines. Ms. Anderson made national news as a former Iowa State Republican Caucus staff member who won a settlement from the state of Iowa for sexual harassment and wrongful termination. We wanted the perspective of an Iowan who spoke up before the Me Too movement became popular. We started out the interview by asking her to summarize what happened.
I worked as the communications director for Iowa Senate Republicans for 5 years. And throughout that time, I was harassed, bullied, and retaliated against. On May 17th, 2013, I formally complained to my boss in the form of a memo. 7 hours later, I was terminated.
Can you explain what you mean by bullied and harassed?
The harassment that I experienced, it was pervasive, mainly perpetuated by a coworker, but also I experienced it from the senators that were elected into office at that time. And it was in the form of pornographic images on state computers. It was verbally, also, in the form of dirty jokes perpetuated by the staff and senators, and offhanded comments, comments about women's anatomy, comments about Senate pages, dress, comments about my dress. I complained 4 times. It fell on deaf ears. Nothing really happened when I did complain. And so I had had enough, and I filed a formal memo and was then fired.
And what was the reason given for your firing?
Insufficient work product. The GOP Senate leadership still maintains that to this day, but this summer a jury of peers found otherwise. I sued the state of Iowa, and this summer in July, my case went to trial, and I won.
Retaliation against a complaint of sexual harassment is illegal.
That is, yes.
That was the basis of your winning the case?
Yes. We had 3 main tenets of my case: harassment, retaliation, and intimidation. Mm-hmm. And on all 3 counts, I was successful, and the jury found in my favor, and that my work product was sufficient in their eyes, and so I won my case. The state did appeal, and in an effort to not go back to trial, we settled my case outside of court.
What gave you the inner permission to speak out about this and to follow through?
Well, this had been building for quite a long time. I mentioned I complained multiple times during my tenure as a state employee, and it fell on deaf ears. And finally, in 2013, I had had enough. I knew that the intimidation and the bullying that they were doing to me, the scrutiny on my work product that had been exemplary in the past, was suddenly questioned and nitpicked. I was being yelled at constantly. I would come home crying. I was being forced to come into the office 10 o'clock at night to fix problems that could be rectified the next morning, things I knew were wrong. I had had enough. I wanted to make the Iowa Senate a better place to work. So I complained 1 last time, and I was fired. And the decision to bring suit against the state, it was a tough one. My name was being dragged through the mud, and I wanted to fight to make it right and make a better workplace for Iowans, just because these people are elected officials. They make our laws doesn't mean that they are above the laws that they make.
It seems like you build up strength along with some anger, and then you wanted to protect other people that were working there now and in the future. Did any of those women come forward when you made the complaint or after you were let go? Did any coworkers contact you?
Sadly and interestingly enough, the coworkers that still work there didn't want to experience what I experienced. They didn't want to lose their jobs. They're fearful. And I don't blame them for that. Everybody stays in a job for a different reason, and you can't fault them for that. And we're still friends. and we've been through a lot together. They still want to work where they're working. I want to help make the environment better for them. They have gone through an internal investigation. They weren't going to release the results. They now have, but it doesn't say a whole lot because it was an investigation conducted by fellow Republicans. And I think harassment is not Democrat or Republican. It's both parties. And if you're going to do an investigation, let's do a thorough job. This is an issue big enough that needs to have a light shined on it, and I don't think a bright enough light was shined on this investigation that was conducted at the State House recently.
What is the story that you're coming away with from having undergone this culture?
I'm coming away with positivity. I think it's good that this story is being shared. I think this is really the tip of the iceberg. I should note that it's not just women who face this. It's minorities. It's people of different ethnicities. This is a power and control thing. This is not a weakness, and there's no shame. There's a lot of shame and a stigma associated with being harassed. And women should not feel that there is shame in this because there's a whole slew of emotions that people go through. You know, like I mentioned, I was to the point where I was crying every day on antidepressants. Things were simply bad.
What was your understanding of why people were doing this to you?
It was not a reflection of me, that this was power and control over me. You know, it wasn't my so-called poor work product. Who knows what it was? I'll probably never know. So the story I'm taking away is that, you know, now that we're talking about it, and I want us to continue to talk about it, the stigma goes away. We have constructive dialogue. We talk with the men in our lives. We can have safe, productive work environments in Iowa and throughout the country, for that matter. It can and will be done. I know that it's coming.
And we're speaking with Kirsten Anderson, who experienced sexual harassment and apparently other forms of harassment at the Iowa State Legislature and really became a national story when you sued after being fired. Since then, have you continued to engage with people about this issue?
Yes. I recently gave my first talk to a group in Des Moines, and I'd like to continue to talk to groups, educate them on how they can have constructive dialogue on the issue, because I think education is key. We shouldn't be fearful about this. If you don't know where to draw the line, how can you move forward with a productive work environment? And everybody deserves that. Truly, everybody deserves a safe work environment, and I feel passionately that we can make that happen. So I'm looking to advocate for Iowans, women, and minorities on this issue.
Would you take this opportunity of being on our community radio station to communicate what it is that you think is most important for people to understand?
I think it's most important for people to understand that they can't remain silent about harassment at work. If you feel uncomfortable about something that was said, a joke that was made, it's okay to say that you felt uncomfortable. There's no shame in that. We need to bring respect and decency back to the workplace. I think it comes down to that. It's basic respect that we're extending to one another.
Do you think it's important to know the rules of the workplace too? You feel empower people to know their rights?
You bring up a great point, and that's another key tenet. Read those policies. Read that handbook. Know what's going on and what is and is not acceptable at the workplace.
People commonly don't know exactly what the law says. Could you just summarize what exactly it is that is not legally allowed under the anti-discrimination laws?
Yeah. Now, granted, I am not a lawyer, but every employee is entitled to a harassment-free environment, and they are entitled to complain about it without the threat of losing their job. That would be considered a retaliatory event.
So in other words, if a woman's or a man is at a job and they feel that sexually inappropriate behavior around them or directed at them, they can say they don't want that to happen. And if it doesn't stop, then it's considered harassment, right?
Yes.
And then to retaliate against objecting to it is illegal.
Right. You must prove that for harassment, it is severe and pervasive. So those two words are key in a legal case to proving right or wrong. Is behavior severe and is it pervasive over a period of time?
You also have to prove that it's based on gender, right? A category that is legally protected?
Yes, that is one category. Know your rights, know your recourse, know the channels that you need to go through if something is happening, if you're being bullied or retaliated against or harassed. Know who to go to in HR. Educate yourself.
And what do you say to a person who says, I understand my rights, but I can't afford to be fired?
Yeah, I've heard from a lot of ladies, and for whatever reason, they're too scared to come forward and complain, and they just have to take it. And I get it.
What does that do to you when you take it?
Mentally, it's awful. It does terrible things to your mental state of mind. It's a dark place, truly. You think you're alone, and the world's out to get you, and you're crying every day. You can't think how to get out of the situation, and something just snaps. You need to have that support system in place to get through it. And, you know, I think in Iowa, we're experiencing sort of a mental health crisis. There's more visibility into it, but as funding continues to reduce for mental health in general, we're going to see more problems. It's not going away. That economic factor is huge, and that's why most people who experience harassment stay and simply take it. But I would say you need to make your own decisions, and that's a very personal decision. Find a way to remove yourself from that situation as much as possible. Be sure to document what is going on, not only for you, but for the other people who observe a situation. Maybe find a way to get a new job, and definitely find a support system. I was really blessed with a wonderful support system in my husband, son, and family and friends, and I recognize not everybody has that. So reach out to people you feel safe talking to about this.
Did you try to talk to people at work about this, other coworkers, and would you advise that?
I did. It was pretty well known. This particular coworker was very open about the vulgarities he used against women and minorities, the jokes that he shared. It was very open, and both male and female coworkers knew it was going on. So my situation was a bit unique, because a lot of times this happens in dark corners, and that's why I want to mention the documentation, because that can be very helpful to people in the future. Even if it seems mundane or silly at first, keep a notebook in my purse. I take it to meetings. Write down how you're feeling, or write down what you're wearing when something happens. Those types of things truly will be helpful in the future.
When you had your court case, did you name names? You identified people?
I did, yes.
And what has happened to those people?
The coworker who was the harasser for so many years, he tendered his resignation to the state of Iowa a few months ago, and senators saying inappropriate things, one was not reelected to office, so he's no longer there either.
So when you saw the cover of Time magazine, what did you think?
You know, that made my day, seeing that, because having lived it and having broken the silence, I just felt vindicated. I feel like we're in the midst of a movement that's not slowing down anytime soon. That gives me a lot of pride and joy, and it just fires me up to help other people going through what I experienced. I was really excited to hear about the Time Person of the Year. I think that this is the tipping point, what we're experiencing right now. We can only move forward in a positive way. We need to continue to talk about it, get comfortable with talking about it.
The actions you took were not in relation to the Me Too movement, were they? Were you aware of that movement when you did this?
No. So I was fired 2013. You know, this has been a four-year long legal battle for me, and the timing is just crazy. I'm glad, because this is a brighter light that's shining on the issue, and these, you know, Hollywood women are using their name to do good and talk about something that has been so quiet for so long. Yeah.
Is there anything that you've learned from this whole incredible process you've gone through?
I've learned that I'm stronger than I thought I was, as corny as that may sound. I went through this bad situation, and now I am able to educate others. I'm comfortable talking about it, and I really have found my passion and calling. I want other Iowans to feel the same way in order to provide safe work environments for everybody. we really got to get, we have to get comfortable talking about this to educate those men. So uncomfortable, and it can be so shameful for people that, yeah, it's hard, and I understand that, but in order to stop talking about it, we need to do it.
Can you be contacted to come and speak to a group?
I would absolutely love that. If they want to contact me, they can email me at politicchick@hotmail.com. Politicchick, C-H-I-C-K, @hotmail.com.
Thank you so much, Kristen.
Thank you,
really
Kristen.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, ladies. It was really nice talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. This is Local Talk on KHOI, and that was Kirsten Anderson from Des Moines. Ms. Anderson made national news as a former Iowa State Republican caucus staff member who won a settlement from the state of Iowa for sexual harassment and wrongful termination. I am one of your hosts today, Joy B., here with Ursula Rudenberg.
And Mary Rankin, Director of Sustainability for the City of Ames and Iowa State University, has joined us for her monthly check-in. Welcome back, Mary.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
It's good to see you. Please introduce the guest that you brought with you.
Well, I am so privileged to invite and bring with me today Ed Moran from Ryman Gardens. Ed is officially a horticulturist,
yes,
but does anything that is necessary at Ryman Gardens.
Of course.
Very
we do.
Knowledgeable and enthusiast for our wonderful gardens. And I invited Ed because as I think about my favorite places this time of the year,
yeah,
Ryman has some really, really interesting things going on for the holidays and incorporates sustainability in so many ways that I imagine our listeners wouldn't even know just by going to the gardens. And so I thought it would be a lovely time to invite Ed to talk about different things that are happening at the gardens. So welcome, Ed.
Welcome,
yeah,
Ed.
Great.
It's
welcome.
Good to have
Thank
you.
You for having me.
We talked a little bit about what you do, which is everything, but maybe just a day in the gardens that people may not realize from a standpoint of sustainability.
This time of year, getting ready for the winter, whether that be shredding leaves or overwintering our rose garden collection to installing a train display. So it really changes from day to day, using volunteers, our student staff, mm-hmm, as well as our professional horticultural staff.
You mentioned planting seeds. We were just talking before
we came on the
air.
'Tis the season. I've gotten very many catalogs.
And so tell me about the seeds because, not all seeds are created equal.
So depending on the project that we're working on. For instance, we just did some winter seeding of some local tall grass prairie plants that were grown and reaped in Winterset.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a possibility of our project being able to use more of a local genotype for plant material, we would definitely look at that.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely try to source local if we can.
Of course.
It's not always possible, but when we can do it, we definitely attempt to do that.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. And of course, you bring up a very good point. The gardens provides awareness on many different levels,
yes,
through many different types of plantings and ecosystems. Such an important educational experience, I think, that gardens such as Ryman Gardens offers to the public because it allows us to have many different experiences in one place.
Just this fall, we just had a ribbon cutting for our new gravel garden, which is Zeroscape.
Meaning little maintenance.
Little maintenance and little water.
Zeroscaping,
yeah.
That means little water?
It's a different type of landscaping and garden style that is kind of new to the Midwest. The idea is we won't have to do much watering to that landscape after those roots are established. And very little weeding because there's about 4 to 6 inches of quartzite gravel on top that the plants were planted in. And so the idea is that they will reach down towards the modified organic soil below and the gravel then will suppress the weeds. Unlike mulch that breaks down and then weeds.
Yeah.
I had never planted a garden in that style before. So we were out there and it was so hot. A lot of the students and volunteers said it was like the Sahara Desert out there that day. Not that I've been there, but I could imagine it was about that. At first was kind of like, are these plants really going to make it? Because it was so hot and we were watering. And, within a few weeks, you started to see growth and you could see that they're starting to perk up and, starting to put some size on them. So, by the fall, there was like a lot of blossoms out there. I'm very excited to see what we'll have. Of course, you're going to have some failure.
So what comes to mind is a bunch of cacti in what
there
you're describing.
There's no cacti in that garden, but we did have some.
Iowa cacti.
There might be. There might be prickly pear. There's prickly pear in a crevice there. So
But in a crevice.
Yeah. So prickly pear is native. There are native prickly pears and to Iowa. So we feature those. So.
That's great. That's so exciting. When we talk about education and transferability, I think is something that really comes forth at Ryman. There are things that are very transferable, and we can bring so many of those ideas home to our own gardens.
Yeah, correct? Whether that be a tomato that you really liked or maybe an ornamental grass, and you were exposed to that too. So,
right.
Does Ryman see part of its mission to educate people about how they can make their own gardens?
Yeah, that's part of our mission. Course, to give people kind of that wow and then hopefully be able to take a little bit home with them. And that's one of my goals. And that's one of the reasons I like to work there every day.
Kudos to Ryman that you live sustainability through all of your operations.
Even down to our copy paper, you know,
post-consumer recycled products.
And even in our number of chemical inputs that we put into the garden, people, I believe, assume that we apply a lot of pesticides. Mm-hmm. That is really
looks so beautiful.
That is not the case.
Yet.
A green option, that's usually our first go-to. Mm-hmm. We do have expensive collections or important collections to the university, and sometimes it is necessary to perhaps use a more aggressive approach. But we're going to use the appropriate approach. And
if we look at the three facets of sustainability, one of those is economic sustainability.
Sure.
And then at the xeriscaping, of course, gosh, how can we look at putting less input into allowing that
and
same
no
experience?
Fertilizer.
In the winter, you think that not a lot is happening maybe at the gardens as we would think of it. But even something as simple, we just were mentioning this, as you have to be mindful of people's safety, getting in and out of the gardens, even down to the ice melt. There's actually a beet-derived product that is used on all of the sidewalks.
Instead of salt?
There is salt and combined in with it. It's more of a way of protecting the concrete from the harshness of the calcium.
But certainly a less amount, not as harsh.
Definitely.
And I think also by that film, you're not having the runoff then that impacts, you know, the environment around.
Yeah, trying to keep the runoff at a minimum and the exposure of that salt away from plant material.
But inside the gardens, there's some really exciting stuff going on right now.
We do. We have Ryman Gardens Railway Express.
Yes, I call it the holiday train.
You can call it whatever you want to call it. I'm good with that.
So talk about that. I mean, I think folks are fairly aware that we have it.
That we have it. This is its third season that we've had it. We started talking about this, I'll bet you, 5 or 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we were very lucky to have been given the opportunity to work with the company that created that, which is Applied Imagination. And they are pretty much the premier garden railroad designer, installation imagineers in the country. They do installations at the Chicago Botanic Garden, New York Botanic Garden, the Bellagio Hotel.
It's amazing.
All over the country.
And we have them here in
and
Ames.
And we have them here in Ames. You have them here in central Iowa. So come out. It goes through January 6th. And it's never – we change our trains usually every week. These are hobby trains, and they originally were meant to be toys, not run 8 hours. So we give our – our engines a break, so we're always changing
sustainability,
things up.
Sustainability.
You have to.
Yes, it transcends throughout everything.
Yes.
But
made out of all natural materials.
Right. So that's what I'm thinking. It's so amazing. Well, yes, definitely encourage folks to go out there.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And
always changing. So
fantastic. Well, and any time at the garden. So when I think that nature is our original artistic palette, right? And gosh, as we are able to go out in nature and not only appreciate what it allows us in, I don't know, that sort of self-sustainability moment, and looking at all the amazing pieces that have been put in related to environmental sustainability and economic sustainability. At the very, very, you know, if I come back to it, the original impression for me is just, you know, the original art right here in front of me that nature gives us every single day. And so I really commend Ryman on all the wonderful things
that you
guys do and all of the work that you do on an ongoing basis. So tell us about when Ryman Gardens is open, when folks can enjoy the gardens.
We're open 9 to 4:30 every day. this time of year. We extend in the summer months. And then on Thursdays, we are open until 8 for extended holiday season through the week of Christmas.
Fantastic. So, yeah. And I would also mention you have some lovely gift shops.
We do.
That have some very sustainably minded gift options.
Plus,
and local
they will
options.
Wrap anything for you.
Well,
so for guys like me who on Christmas Eve still haven't started, it's the place to go.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, and I would also say holiday tree sales are happening to the ISU Forestry Club. And they have a lovely selection that we have ours from ISU Forestry Club as well.
Yeah.
And now winter will be through and then it will be warm.
Yes.
And we encourage people to get out and see all the great things happening related to the renovation, which is going to
and
blow our
ready,
minds on
you're
a
going
continual
to,
basis.
Hopefully be under construction next summer for Sycamore Falls.
Oh, fantastic.
At the south end. A lot of people drive by and see the start of it, but hopefully it will be out. It's out to bid now. Hopefully we'll be under construction and have a beautiful garden by fall. That's one of our goals.
That's so exciting. Website?
You just go to RymanGardens.com. There's a whole list of all of our education and events and all kinds of information.
Oh, because you have so many classes we didn't even touch on.
Yeah.
So please, everyone, go out to the website and check out all that Ryman Gardens has to offer, more than you would ever imagine. Thank you so very much,
thank
Ed.
You for having me.
And we've been speaking with Mary Rankin, Director of Sustainability from the City of Ames and Iowa State University, along with Ed Moran from Ryman Gardens. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Ursula.
Our pleasure.
Thank
you for coming.
Yeah.
And you've been listening to Local Talk. We've been your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg and Joy B. Thank you for joining us. Earlier in the show, we heard from Dennis Hart, KHOI Civic Reporter, with a news roundup from the pages of the Ames Tribune, amestribune.com. We also heard voices of students at ISU on the topic of sexual harassment, and Kirsten Anderson, former Iowa State Senate Republican caucus staff member who won a settlement from the state of Iowa for sexual harassment and wrongful termination.
Today's show was engineered by Jackie Norman. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk airs 7 a.m. to noon and noon, 7 p.m. here on KHOI 89.1 FM. Remember that you can also hear KHOI live online at khoifm.org. You will find a recording of this show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster is able to post it, with links to guests and information you heard during the program. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. with headline news at the top of the hour. And stay tuned for Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Stevens Auditorium, presenting the 37th Annual Nutcracker Ballet on Saturday, December 9th and 10th. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.